The Bible reading this morning is from Lamentations, the third chapter, starting with 21 through 24. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore I will hope in him.
Good morning on this, as John said, this chilly morning, but glad to see us all out and with us this morning. As we get into the third poem here in the book of Lamentations, if you've been keeping track, and hopefully I've been keeping you up to speed on this, this is not a 22-verse poem where each verse is begun by the next letter in the alphabet. Pardon me. Instead, this is a 66-verse poem where each letter of the alphabet has three verses assigned to it. And so it's still an acrostic, but there are just three lines per letter. The structure is still there. It's just we get three times as much for each letter. And so as we begin looking at this, I know we're obviously not going to read all 66 verses, but the first part of the chapter is very grim. There's a lot of language in there that is talking about the writer's suffering, talking about the pain and anguish that the writer is going through. But then as we get towards the end, it gets a little more hopeful. And that's the whole point of the book of Lamentations. We all can relate to different times in our lives that we come across this type of anguish or type of suffering. But if the Bible didn't provide a remedy for that, then it wouldn't be very beneficial for us to study it. But as we get through it, we'll see how the writer chooses to get through the suffering and anguish through which he is going. So the first 20 verses are really about lost hope. He has given up in a lot of different ways, and we will talk about this, and you can just, from the verses, you can just viscerally almost feel the pain that the writer is experiencing. His grief is so great that he has become physically ill and has physical pain based upon what he's going through in his life. Verse 4 says, he has made my flesh and my skin waste away. He has broken my bones. That doesn't feel like a good time. And that's how he's feeling internally. His flesh wasn't literally falling off of him, and I'm sure his bones were not broken. But he's using imagery to describe the physical anguish that this suffering that is coming upon him and others in Jerusalem. He is just feeling that anguish. And so it just gives a picture of a loss of hope for the future. In the Old Testament, the bones of the righteous are not broken, which means they have a hope of a future, but that's not how this writer is choosing to see. In verse 5, he says he is swallowed up in bitterness. In verses 7 and 8, he feels kind of walled in, chained up, and just blocked off from any path out of the way he's feeling. Verses 10 through 13, God has shot arrows through his body, even into his bowels, and just crushing any hope he had. His emotions are just really all over the place. His pain is so great that in verse 17 he says, I have forgotten what happiness is. If that doesn't tell you what this man is going through, he can't even remember when there were good times, which tells me this has been going on for so long and to such an extreme, it has just taken any glimmer of happiness out of his life. The crowning statement for this section, though, is in verse 18. Verse 18, he says, so I say, he's talking to himself here, my endurance has perished, so has my hope from the Lord. He's not saying the hope from the Lord is actually passed from him, but that's what he's thinking. He's saying to himself, it's gone. The hope is gone. Now, if you've been alive long enough, I think we all have experienced bad times in our life where we've probably felt similar thoughts. What hope do I have? I can't remember the last time I was happy. It would have to be a pretty extreme case, but we've all had probably pretty extreme cases in our life where we have not been really happy with how things have been going. And you may be even dealing with something like that right now. Hopefully that's not the case, but we don't always know what is going on with each other. And so we may have had times where we felt like our grief and our sorrow were just eating us up from the inside out, just destroying us from within. And so we are having our strength and our endurance just tested. They're going so far as to make our strength wane, and along with it, in any hope that we've had. So it's not really difficult at all to maybe understand what the writer is dealing with here. His grief is incalculable. He can't describe it in terms that aren't just physically wrenching. His hope is lost. But that's not how the poem ends, or not even the book. We still got 2.5 chapters of book here. And so he doesn't end it right here. But so many people, when they're having struggles in their life, this is where they choose to end it. Sometimes they literally end their life at that point in time. But some people are so consumed by the issues and the troubles in their life that they just are not able to move past it. But we are learning from this rest of this chapter that there is no place where we should stop. We can't stay in a situation where we have no hope, where we can't remember when happiness is. Even though our days may be challenging and be very trying, we cannot end our day, our week, our month on that note. And so even in this midst of pain and sorrow that the writer is experiencing, he's going to teach us how we all can move forward when we are having such issues. So the verses that Jim read, he read 21 through 24. And so what the author does here is very important. And these three verses, 22, 23, 24, are going to be very important for us to fully understand how we can get through challenging times. But he says here at the beginning, "But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." He knows that he's going through rough times, but he says, "But I settle myself down, I calm myself down, and I say to myself, I do have hope." He doesn't act on his emotions, he doesn't act on his feeling, he doesn't lash out at the bitterness and pain he's having. He doesn't just throw his hands up in the air and say, "This is hopeless. I can't go on from this point forward." He doesn't just give up. And in fact, it's just the opposite. He says that he will put something in his mind while he's in this state of mind. Then he's going to put hope in his heart because he's going to put his mind on something in particular. Verses 23 through 24 record what it is that he's going to and is electing to think about. As Jim was reading those, I wondered how many of you... It's a song we don't sing too often here. It's number 123. But basically the words from that passage are the words of the song. And so I know when I was preparing this, I had that song in my head. But those verses are almost word for word the lyrics of that song. Essentially, the author here is going to preach to himself. He's going to say, "Listen, you need to remember things that are innate in you, things that are a part of you, and you need to look at that while I'm suffering." And so he's going to preach to himself here. And the first thing is that the steadfast love of the Lord never ends. He realizes that the compassion and the mercies that the Lord offers to us, not only do they never end, they're never going to fail. They are never going to be what is causing us to not have hope. And so the author recalls multiple proofs of this love that the Lord has. He calls to mind how God's love never ends, and we should be able to do the same and have that recollection. We all should be able to think about how God has been faithful to us and recall different times in our life when we've been needing his help, and we've reached out to him and he has responded, and he's given us a path out of the challenges we may be having, because his love never fails us. His love is never not available, and it is there just for us to be just like this writer. We just need to come to mind. The Lord has love available to me. And this is the knowledge that we have to have when we are having troubling times to get us through it. It's really the basis of the rest of what he says here. And the next thing he says is that the Lord's love and the Lord's mercies, they're renewed every morning. They don't have an expiration date. They don't get this through. This is what I give you for the rest of the week. That's the best I can do. No, every morning, his love and his mercy are renewed. It's a fresh outpouring of this love upon us. And every day offers new help, new hope, I should say, that the compassion that the Lord has available for us will be put into our life. The future may look dark and it may all seem hopeless, but each day is a new opportunity for us to realize that the Lord is there and is able to and does provide that love and that mercy to us. And so basically what the writer is saying here, I need to take one day at a time. The Lord will help me through this day, and then tomorrow it will be another step, and the Lord will refresh that love. The next day after that, it's literally putting one foot in front of the other, but it's through the love that the Lord has for us. Every day that love is available to us. And it's just up to us to think on it that way and to realize it and to depend on it. We need to live in the mercy that God provides us for today, and that will get you through what you need to get through for today. And then tomorrow will help you tackle that day and so forth. Now you'll notice maybe that in the author in verse 24, he says, my soul says, the Lord is my portion. Now a portion in the Old Testament concepts generally is talking about land. In Numbers 18, verse 20, and the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, neither shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the people of Israel. I think this is a situation where he's telling him the Levites were not going to have their own land, but they would live among the land, among the people. They would not have their own portion. But he says, I am your portion. So here's an example of Aaron being told that the Lord can be that fulfillment in their lives. And so that's what the author is saying. The Lord, not land, is my portion. And he declares his independence on the Lord for his provisions and for his survival. He's going to be dependent on him taking care of him. And so therefore his conclusion is, based upon all these things that I've just said to myself, therefore I will hope in him. Hope is being restored in him because he sat back, didn't let emotion take over his life, but he sat back and looked at all the things that the Lord had provided in the past and will provide in the future. And he says, I do have hope. There's hope in the Lord. And this is how we ourselves can help overcome grief, sorrow, pain that we may have in our lives at any time. You never know when there could be something that comes upon us. And if we look upon these three verses here in Lamentations chapter 3, it should ground us. It should help us be able to go through that suffering. And so from verses 25 to 39, the author now takes his hope and proclaims to those who are suffering just like him. Verse 25 says, the Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. And then as we go into verse 26, it proclaims the need to wait and seek for the Lord. Wait for the deliverance that he offers. Wait for the salvation that he can deliver. The Lord will help, but we have to be looking for it. It's not going to be something that just happens. We have to be looking to him. We have to be looking for him in order to realize the relief that he is able to provide. Now the author continues to preach to himself, but also to the people in verses 27 through 30, in that he says, "Is it good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth?" This is a reference to a yoke of suffering and pain, because it is instructive and it's helpful to others. The earlier we learn from the yoke of suffering, the more valuable it will be later on in our lives. And what that means is we have to accept God's will and just refuse to complain. Complaining doesn't add anything to our lives, but dependence on the Lord can. And so we have to accept that and not look to blame others or just bemoan our situation. We're to bow before the Lord, and we are to be humble in our hearts, and our mouths should be expressing that. We should recall at all times that we are servants of the Lord, and that no matter what we're doing in our, what may be going on in our lives, our dependence and our love for the Lord should not wane. And then we just need to remember who we are, submit to the Lord, and be hopeful. And so his message continues by the building on of faith. I have verses 32 through 32. So I'm thinking maybe 31 through 32 or 32 through 33. I'm not quite sure. So I'm sure you can find it if you kind of look around 32. "For the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love." Even in grief, God will have compassion for us because of his steadfast love. If we look at Micah chapter 7, verses 18 and 19, that passage says, Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over transgression for the remnant of his inheritance? He does not retain his anger forever, because he delights in steadfast love. He will again have compassion on us. He will tread our iniquities underfoot. You will cast all our sins into the depths of the sea. It's a great visual image of the picture of the character of God. Everything in those two verses in Micah we can look upon and we can look to when we are having these issues in our life. Verse 33 of Lamentations 3 says, "For he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men." The punishment for the people's sin is not from his heart. It is not willingly. He doesn't want to have to judge people, but he must, because the Lord is a just God, and he's not able to have he cannot overlook sins in people's life that just because they are maybe the stature in their life or who they are. He is not a respecter of persons, and so he has to be just. And everyone will be judged accordingly, one against the other. And this kind of takes us back to the first point that the author made in the very first poem. God is always right. That's what we remember. If we in verses 37 through 39, this thought really is put back into practice. In these verses, he says, Who are we to complain against God? We're the ones who have sinned. God is right. God is just. God is pure. God is holy. We are only getting what we deserve for the sins that we've committed in our lives. In fact, really, we're not receiving what we should. We should be punished much greater, but because of the steadfast love that the Lord does have and the compassion that he has, that will allow us to hopefully keep our minds in the right frame of mind and overcome the sins or the conditions that have led us. And so we will be humble when we realize that we deserve nothing, and everything we have in life through the grace of God has been provided. As we then go through, I've got to quickly wrap up, 40 through 51, with this, the author declares that we need to examine our ways and pray to the Lord. Anytime we examine ourselves and look at our lives honestly, it should cause us to pray, because we should realize that we have fallen short of God's glory, and that we need to reflect on that. The author says that he will continue to pour out his tears And also pray to the Lord until the Lord from heaven looks down and sees what he's going through. And so this is what he said in the first poem. I think we talked about how many times he says, "Look, O Lord." I think it was 5 or 6 times in just a few verses that he made that statement. And so at this time, he's saying, I'm going to continue to pray to the Lord because he is the source of any relief that's available to me. And that love of the Lord that's renewed each morning is the only thing that will be able to help me get through this situation. And then as we close the chapter 52 through 66, the feelings of despair that continue in the heart of the author and in the hearts of the people that are still prevalent here. And it says the despair is so great, it's as if water was closed over his head and is now drowning. He says he's lost, but we have to look at then what happens. In the depths of his despair, he cried to the Lord, and the Lord heard his plea in verses 55 through 57. He cried out. God came near when he cried out and gives him the hope, the strength, and the courage that he needs to move forward. And so the author sees that God is near him and has taken up his cause. God saw what had happened to him because he cried out to him. And so God, in verses 58 through 63, really talks about he's able to see the evil that has caused people to, that have caused these challenges, these sorrows to be inflicted upon them. And he's able to help us if we will respond to him and cry out to him. Finally, as we look at verses 64 through 66, we arrive at the final hope that the author realizes here, that God will repay. God is going to take care of us through suffering and pain and grief if we call out to him. But because he is a just and a faithful God, he will be compassionate towards those who wait for him and for those that are seeking him. And he knows that God will act faithfully upon those that are suffering, will deal against those that may have been the source of the suffering and pain that is in their lives. And so God's people should recognize that their lives are not determined by fate or destiny. That is not something that a Christian should believe, that it's going to happen one way or the other. Our lives are in the hands of the living God. And if we are faithful to him, it can lead us to one outcome. If we choose to not be faithful to him, there will be another. Our praise and our hope are motivated by the knowledge of this fact, that he is responsible for how our lives will end up. And responsible in the sense that it's based upon his judgment. The compassion of God is helpful for us to consider when we are dealing with grief and sorrow. But the compassion that the Lord has is an important measure for us. It should help us focus on the depth of his love for us. And so this is the author's hope, that even though he feels that all hope is lost, he's able to tell himself and others that God's faithfulness is great and his mercies every day are renewed. Brother Paul was down for the prayer. I will ask Brother Richard if he wouldn't mind to just say a word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed our class.